House Bill 2345, May 1st.
Committee will come to order. Today we're going to have a public hearing on House Bill 3445. Representative Gilmore.
Yes, for the record, my name is Jeff Gilmore, Jefferson, Oregon. I introduced House Bill 3445 after I personally and several of my neighbors became concerned on a problem. The problem arose from the fact that we live in a drainage district, small, called Sydney. Over the years, it would appear that there has been in this drainage district a very large increase in the amount of dairy animals on this drainage district, and that while I farm for a living, or attempt to at times, and find it somewhat difficult to pick on another element of farming, that it came to my conclusion after different first-hand knowledge that there was a problem in the dairy industry primarily. There's a problem in any area where there is confined animals on a small tract of property that has not the capability of handling the waste. House Bill 3445 was introduced at my request. There has been consultation between me and the Department of Agriculture for the last 3 to 4 weeks concerning the bill. It was not my desire that we moved the regulation or inspection to DEQ, that it was an ag problem. We needed to keep it in the agriculture interest. There has been amendments drafted which I believe dramatically changed the original bill, and I believe the staff has those. Department of Ag, my understanding, has passed out some of the same amendments to other interest. I bring this to you for your action to take a look at whether or not we need to change what we're currently doing. It's my knowledge that now a person applies for a confined animal permit. They're issued on a 5-year basis. There is no proof of accuracy of that, whether there be changes or not in that. What is happening currently is they're responding, Department of Ag and DEQ, only on complaints. The Department of Ag started with a person at 20%, I believe. That person now, Alan Yost, is devoting his full time to it. I believe the Department of Ag is where we should keep this enforcement if there is pollution. By no means do I think that all dairies or all confined animal feeding areas are in violation, number one. Number two is there are good and there are bad. There are mistakes, but I think if we have at least a different approach to taking a look at least number one annually, we raise some fees for that inspection so it doesn't come from the general fund directly. We work closer with the Department of Ag and Soil, Water, and Conservation so that we can control future pollution problems. With the changing of the economy, the sizes of dairies and their location has got to be taken a look at with the fragile environment in which they're sited. If there are no questions at this time, I'd like to make sure that the department comes up and discusses some of the amendments that we've worked with.
Thank you. Any questions?
Representative Hanlon.
Should we be looking at number two or number one on the amendments?
They're both very, very similar. I think staff can tell you the definition being represented. So it took them down and had them drafted, and staff also did. The difference, I believe, is in the description of the beginning of the amendments as far as laying out some definitions and some thought involved.
Yes, Representative Hanneman, on the amendments that I asked Legislative Council to prepare, I just asked them to make it flow a little bit better rather than putting penalties right up front and just the definitions would come first, and then the problem, and then basically penalties being at the end. About the only change.
Set number one, a set number two, and an extra page four that is no different from, that is not similar to either of the page fours in the bill.
It's a dash three.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Mr. Corey.
The primary differences between dash one and dash two, again, are the fact that section two of the dash two amendment provides for a policy statement by the Legislative Assembly. The effective date does not appear until page three of the dash two amendments. Contrast that with the dash one amendments, where the effective date occurs in section one. There is no policy statement, and as the chairman indicated, we move immediately into the violation and the fees. The extra page is a possible amendment that if the committee gets that far today, we can discuss and talk about a possible funding source.
Okay.
I have one more thing to add, Mr. Chairman. In most industry where there is a possibility of pollution, this is one area in which that I have not put anything in the statute or attempted to do with the cleanup of a pollution spill. In most industries, whether it be oil or battery acid or whatever, there is something in the statute that relates to a cleanup approach of that. I felt as though at this time, until we get a handle on who those polluters are and work with them to alleviate some of those problems with new technology or through soil and water or whatever, if we didn't want to get in a prohibited state to develop a fund by those that are in the industry, I thought that it might be pushing it too far.
Thank you, Representative Gilmore. Did you have another question, Senator Bradbury?
No, that was exactly the same question.
Mr. Corey.
If, for simplicity, I think I would suggest that unless the agency has some pride in authorship on the dash one amendment, that they address the fees as they appear in the dash two amendment. There should be no difference between the two, and again, I think the clarity in the dash two amendments make it a better amendment to address.
We'll ask the department to come up and say a few words, and while they're coming up, I just like to explain the ground rules. As Mr. Pori just indicated, it's the preference of the committee chair that we talk about the principles and the way that the dash two amendments are laid out, and not to the original bill. I know probably a lot of you have come to speak in opposition to the original bill, but the amendments are different. And further, we have I think over 20 people signed up. If you have a statement that's written, we'd appreciate it if you turn that in and then just say a few words about your feelings on the issue. If you have some scientific data that you want to present one way or the other, we'll give you a little leeway. Otherwise, we'd like you to confine your comments to about 2 minutes so that we can get the hearing concluded in a timely manner. Go ahead, Bruce.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'm Bruce Sanders, Director of the Department of Agriculture. With me is Phil Ward, Assistant Director, and Dick Nichols of the Department of Environmental Quality, who is responsible for the water program within the department. And both Dick and Phil were responsible in terms of working with Representative Gilmore and crafting the original language. And the reason that I've asked Dick to come up is that he wordsmithed the bill as it is presented and amended. So I'll turn them over to discuss the amendments and the various sections of that bill.
Representative Sola, members of the committee, I'm Dick Nichols. As Bruce has said, I think perhaps the best way to do it is go through it section by section, if that's what you'd like, and kind of lay out at least the thoughts that we had based on the concerns that we understood were there. There's some of this that has been added to it since I drafted it, and I'm not opposed to it, but I didn't draft it. Certainly Section 2, which deals with the policy of the state of Oregon to protect the quality of the waters, is a condition that we can support. Section 3 defines what a confined animal feeding operation is. And I admit that it's particularly broad, and almost anything where you have animals that will either, whether in a confined area or such that they will remove the vegetative cover, would fall under CAFO. Now, this section, as it is used in the rules, narrows the definition. And if you look on, and I don't know which are you looking, I've got 3445-2. Yep. on page 4, it talks about in item D. Now it says construct, install, operate, or conduct any industrial, commercial, and the term confined animal feeding operation is added there, or other establishment or activity or an extension or modification thereof or addition thereto, the operation or conduct of which would cause, and this is the part that's important relative to this definition, which would cause an increase in the discharge of waste into the waters of the state, or which would otherwise alter the physical, chemical, or biological properties of any waters of the state in any manner not already lawfully authorized, such that while the definition of CAFO is broad, this narrows it to those establishments which would cause an increase in the discharge of waste or affect the properties of the surface water. So from my perspective, I think it's reasonably narrowed. When I drafted this, I tried to figure out different ways to narrow it, but I thought by narrowing it, then you exclude certain potential sources of animal waste where they might be entering public waters, and I didn't want to leave that door very far open. Section 4 requires that a permit for a confined animal feeding operation would specify the maximum number of animals that need to house the facility. The purpose behind that is land can utilize certain quantities of animal waste in a beneficial manner and in a manner such that pollutants aren't either carried into groundwater or into surface water. And you can design a facility for so many animals to assure that. From the enforcement side, or assuring that in fact the land can handle it, it's hard to do that unless you can tie it to a specific number that can be verified when you enter the particular animal feeding operation and check out what's going on. So it was felt that by requiring that the maximum number of animals be specified, then that would be a quick and easy check to make sure that the carrying capacity of the land was not being exceeded. Paragraphs 1 and number and 2 deal with that. Number 1 says that the maximum number of animals specified a permit should be based on the capacity of the operation to adequately treat, hold, and dispose of those wastes. And number 2 says that if you have more animals at the facility than is required in your permit, that's a violation of ORS 468, etc. Section 5 has to deal with the fees. I was going to let Phil Ward addressed part of this relative to the annual compliance determination fee. But I would like to note in Part A, there's a fee for an application of $200, which would occur after July 1, for any application after July 1, 1990. The intent being that we already have a lot of folks already on permits, and those will be rolled over without any cost. However, those that would apply thereafter would have a $200 fee. And the $200, I believe, is a fee that will pay for the expense of determining what the carrying capacity of a particular feeding operation is, such that there will be a basis to set the animal figure that would be provided for in the permit. Subparagraph B, an application fee for increasing the number of permitted animals, $100. Again, that's, I think, as the permit is carried, folks may have a desire to add animals, and that will require an analysis of what the carrying capacity of that operation is, and there will be some cost associated with it for which this fee is intended to cover.
Just a question. This $200 is for any confined feeding animal feeding operation. Would that not be would that be refunded if you found out that it didn't meet the qualifications that that we added on page 4?
Representative, so I would believe that it could. If you don't need the permit, then you shouldn't have to pay the fee.
Right. Then if there's no discharge in the water, you would return the application to the person.
Well, Representative, so most of the permits will not allow a discharge to public waters. The issue, I think, will be does it generate wastewater that's likely to enter public waters, or and how is that being disposed of, treated? And if the water is being disposed of and treated, then a permit will be required. A permit would not be required if wastewater wasn't being generated. And so I think that the determination would be that, well, is there wastewater being collected, treated, and disposed?
Representative Hamlin.
Sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
Did I hear you say a moment ago that the $200 fee would be waived if existing permits were already in place?
The way I anticipated this, Representative Hanneman, would be that there are already a number of sources that are already on permit, and that rather than assess a fee for those as they're rolled over into this confined animal feeding operation permit, that there would be no charge for rolling those over.
Where does it say that in the amendments?
It doesn't.
Before we go to Senator Bradbury, I'd just like to state for the record that State Representative Chuck Norris has joined us at the table. He is also on the House Water Policy Committee and has a personal interest in this bill. Senator Bradbury.
Can you show me where in the proposed amendments it sends the fee to, well, let me ask you another, where does the fee revenue go? That's the first question.
Representative Soa, Senator Bradbury, the fee as proposed would be used by the Department of Agriculture primarily for the conducting of an inspection program of confined animal feeding operations. Phil Ward, I believe, is prepared to talk about how the monies would be spent and how many positions would be developed out of as a result of this legislation. Some of the resources would be channeled to the Department of Environmental Quality for us to do the paperwork, the legal work relative to an enforcement action. Other than that, the rest of it would be to the Department of Agriculture.
Mr. Chairman. Senator Bradbury, I believe a further explanation would be that DEQ will collect the fees and through a memorandum of agreement make a payment to the Department of Agriculture.
Mr. Chair, can Senator you show Bradbury. Me in the amendments where that's laid out? If anywhere.
Representative Soa, Senator Bradbury, that is not in the amendments. We have a memorandum of agreement with the Department of Agriculture right now relative to the general permits and the fees that we collect and where that money goes and what it's used. So we didn't think that this statute had to address that because we can address that under our current.
Okay, Mr. Chair, would it be appropriate for me to hear a little bit about what the Department of Agriculture wants to do with the money?
Certainly.
That would be acceptable to you.
Mr. Chair, Phil Ward from the Department of Agriculture. We were set a couple tasks in this effort. One was to design a fee system which would generate around $100,000 annually to provide some other fund money to this program. And additionally, then, we were asked to design, Senator Bradbury, the program that would fulfill the elements of the things Representative Gilmore was looking for, the annual inspection, the prompt response to complaints, those kind of things. And so what we did, and again in Section 5 of the Dash 2 amendments is what I'm looking at, is we designed a fee system after struggling with this issue for just a little bit that, based on our calculations in terms of what we feel fairly confident in terms of operations that should be permitted, would generate a little over $100,000 a year. This fee system is based, as you see it articulated there in Section 5, on the amount of animal waste that the various species of animals listed there generate daily. And with a full-grown dairy animal generating the most, and of course obviously down to the poultry generating the least. And so we tried to do that on a percentage rate based on standard Soil Conservation Service specifications in terms of what a different animal generates in terms of animal waste. So that's how we arrived at the per animal figures you see there. We felt that everyone should have a $25 base fee, no matter their herd sizes, if they fit into the classification. The program we designed, Senator, is one that would have several different staff positions, and I'll just run through those if you like now. One of the key positions in this program would be what we've called a supervising civil engineer on the fiscal impact statement we worked up. This would be someone with engineering credentials who could assist when problems have been determined to exist with a facility that could assist us in designing solutions to those problems. One of the challenges that we're currently facing is that the customary source of technical assistance that we've used to help folks with animal waste problems over the years, the Federal Soil Conservation Service, through their tie with our local soil and water districts, is under some extreme workload problems due to the Food Security Act of 1985. And so they have not been quite as available at times to assist in dealing with animal waste problems. So we felt we needed to have engineering capability on board to do that. This person would also serve as field staff making routine inspections. Two additional program coordinator ones that would serve as field staff making those annual compliance inspections, investigating complaints and doing all the other routine kind of duties that we find in this program. There's an additional program coordinator one in there that would be dedicated to the Department of Environmental Quality to coordinate their enforcement efforts in this area, and this was listed in at their request. We included a half of an FTE for a microbiologist to work in our laboratory running the lab samples generated by the complaints, and then one full-time clerical support. How many FTE total? Excuse me, Mr. Chair, Representative Hanneman. So we're looking at 5.5 total FTE, 4.5 of which would go to the Department of Ag and one to the Department of Environmental Quality.
Mr. Chair.
And Bradbury.
So by design, you would have the ability both to inspect confined animal feeding operations, but you would also have the ability on staff to help design a better waste management system for folks so that they wouldn't just have you coming around saying you're a dirty actor and then going home and waiting for you to clean up your own clean up their act. So you would be in a position to provide some extension type work to get things cleaned up.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bradbury, I think we'd be naive if we believed with one engineering position we could handle all the animal waste needs in the state, but we felt, especially in those critical situations where help was unavailable from other sources, we needed to be able to supply some help to the producer in that situation, yes.
How many operations, you probably, I don't know if you have it on here somewhere, but how many operations would you expect to have to inspect in a year?
Our calculations were based on inspecting, Mr. Chair, Senator Bradbury, about 1,000 operations per year in terms of routine inspections. Now, certainly there would be many more visits locally based on response to complaints, I would guess.
Now, and you're going to do that many inspections, which is more than 1,000, I mean, you're, as you just said, with what, two, or are you going to have the engineer out there doing some of them too?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bradbury, we would anticipate that engineer, yes, would be actively involved in those. Additionally, the staff position that currently is dedicated to this program in the agency would be involved as well.
So you'd have three plus FTE out in the field?
That's correct.
How many do you have now?
Representative Gilmore.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gilmore, one.
Who pays what now?
That's general fund money.
Okay.
Representative Hanlon.
Do you feel comfortable with your figure of 1,000, considering that the bill has a base of 10 dairy cows, 10 beef cows, 15 veal, 10 swine, 10 horse, 25 sheep, and 200 turkeys and chickens? Only 1,000 in the state of Oregon? That isn't what you said, I think.
No, that's 10 animals or more.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Hanneman, the what we designed was currently we have permitted close to 600 dairies in the state under the current program. We would anticipate that we'd bring in up to 700 dairies in the state. The rest of these animal numbers, and Mr. Nichols could probably speak to this more clearly, but it's our understanding that the intent of this bill is not to bring in a lot of operations that aren't already covered under the regulations that are currently in effect. So we were not basing the calculations in terms of what's out there on how many total operations there were for example, how many beef operations there were with 10 animals or more, but how many feedlot operations there were that would fit the definition of a CAFO as qualified by the wastewater disposal system things that Mr. Nichols explained earlier. Additionally, you might note in Section 5, Line 21, there's language that exempts confined animal feeding operations of 4 months or less duration, and the intent of that was some of the seasonal, for example, beef winter holding grounds in eastern Oregon that are not causing a problem, but that might fit the definition of CAFO as articulated here, would be exempt from this, from the permit program.
Are you finished with your comments?
Chairman, so I have a few more if you would like.
Let's hurry rapidly through this so we can hear from the public.
Yes, sir. Section 2 under section, subsection 2 under section 5 just has to do that with exempting certain classes from the fees. Subsection 3 is intended, I guess, to punish the folks who have been assessed a civil penalty to a greater degree than those who are innocent. And maybe I haven't said that right. But what I was concerned about when I drafted that is essentially the innocent folks who are going to have to pay for a permit fee on this thing are paying for those for us to track down the guilty ones. And it was, I felt that there should be some way to try and skew the cost of the permit program to those who have violated permit conditions and violated state law. And such that, anyway, what this section says is that if you've been assessed a civil penalty in the last 3 years, then you would pay two times the permit fee instead of just one. Section 4 is, they say, basically allows the permit to contain any condition necessary to assure that waste are properly disposed of. Subsection 5 is a little different than the rest of our permit program in that it would be a permit that would not expire. All our permits are statutorily required now to have a 5-year life at maximum. That creates a paperwork burden that I don't think is all that productive in all cases. The permit would basically be permanent unless revoked or modified by the director or would terminate upon request of the permit holder. It does require that a confined animal feeding operation be inspected by the Department of Agriculture, and there's one word that should be inserted in there that I noticed that I left out at one time.